Dad wouldn't wait for me in the lobby. Lawyers see their clients in their office. They don't meet them in lobbies. So I descend the stairs to the third floor of his nursing home and knock. "Come in," Dad would bellow as I entered his small spare room. I'd often find him on top of the covers, fully dressed. Dad wore heavy lace-up shoes. One shoe had a built-up bottom like a clown shoe. I had it made specially for him after he broke his hip and couldn't completely straighten out his right leg. I'm already impatient to get going. We're late for the doctor's appointment, but aren't lawyers used to keeping their clients waiting? "Let the doctor wait for me," Dad used to say. "They never see you on time anyway." Dad hauled himself out of bed. He kept his walker at the foot of the bed. He turned to face me and put his clown shoe on the floor. All this would unfold in ultra-slow motion. I'd sit on the one chair in the small room. It's a high-back chair that my brother and I rescued from my father's law office when we cleaned it out after he broke his hip and had to give up a 50-year legal career. Now it's stacked with old New York Times. Dad only reads news about Israel. Arts and leisure, sports, even obituaries hold no interest for him. I'd collect Dad's walker, and we'd begin the maddeningly slow journey from his room to the elevator. Even though Dad can use the walker, he prefers that I push him in a wheelchair. We descend in a large steel elevator. Once in the elevator, Dad begins the inquisition. I'm a captive audience. Third floor. "Jill, which doctor are we going to?"
"Dr. Williams, the one you told me to take you to because you wanted a colonoscopy."
"Oh, yeah. I've been constipated." Second floor.
"You don't think there's a problem, do you, Jill?"
"No, Dad. In fact, I don't even think you need one. Most people do everything in their power to avoid getting a colonoscopy." First floor.
"Which doctor are we going to? Why am I going to see this doctor?"
I sigh. The door opens. We enter the lobby, which is littered with balled-up tissues. A slow-motion parade of residents patrol the lobby, using walkers, electric wheelchairs, and hanging onto the arms of paid-by-the-hour, bored-looking nurses' aides. I leave Dad in the lobby while I go outside to get the car. Now the real maneuvering begins. Returning to the lobby, I wheel Dad through the two sets of double doors and out onto the small lip of concrete that serves as the sidewalk. There's not much room to spare. I remind Dad to lock his wheelchair.
"Which way do I move these things?"
Dad asks, pushing the brakes back and forth. "Back, Dad, away from you," I remind him, for possibly the 200th time. I unfold his gray metal walker and place it in front of him in anticipation of our pas de deux. Nothing happens. Dad stares thoughtfully at the walker, like he knows he's supposed to do something with it, but just can't figure it out. "Dad, get up."
"I can't get up."
"Oh, come on, Dad, get up now," I bark. We're almost 45 minutes late for the doctor's appointment. Like a water buffalo emerging from a nap, Dad uncomfortably totters to his feet and lifts his bottom out of the wheelchair. His pants are deeply wrinkled and smell of urine. I open the car door, and Dad begins a painful side shuffle to get himself paralleled. Dad looks bewildered as he stares at the passenger side of my car.
How do I get into this thing again?"
"We've done this transfer hundreds of times. Don't yell, don't scream, don't lose it now," I coach myself.
"Grab the handle, Dad."
I put my dad's clammy hand on the plastic handle just inside of the door frame of my car. Releasing one hand from the walker is scary. This is his version of a walk in outer space. Incredibly, Dad manages to haul himself into the passenger seat. But Houston, we have a problem. Dad isn't sitting upright. He's lowered himself into the car at a 45-degree angle and is about to flip ass over tea kettle. He's wedged himself in between the seat and the dashboard with half of his body hanging out of the car. "Jill, help me," he bellows, fear in his voice. I tell him to use his feet and hands to help me. I know Dad can do this, but he doesn't. Keeping an iron grip on the small plastic handle, he bicycle pedals his feet and gets no traction. He huffs and puffs. It goes nowhere.
"Push, Dad, push,"
I command. And slowly we manage to get him mostly upright.
I put my hand on the top of his head to keep him from clunking it on the doorframe as I shove him into the car. Then I draw the seatbelt over my father's bulging stomach and get him into the upright and locked position. The whole operation has taken just shy of an hour. Dad stares straight ahead and pronounces in his most authoritative voice, "Let's go, Jill."